Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, the Frontispiece 4 investigate what might be actual terrorism connected to the falsely accused terrorists in giant air quotes from Slagpie. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hey, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Cato Burke, a.k.a. Hecate, a fixer in your friendly neighborhood fixer kind of way, perhaps confronting a thing that it might be too late to fix.
My name is Robin, and I'll be playing Callisto Armitage, sometimes Officer, sometimes Revenant, and I definitely need a new bed for these.
Note to self.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Matchstick, or Luke Byrne, and some chucklefuck just put out my eyes in the city.
Hello, I'm Nick. You might remember me from when I started introducing myself a few seconds ago, and I'll be playing Ing the Android.
I do remember you. That's what
happens. Hooray, that's good news.
You always manage to destroy me. Like, not even into the actual episode yet, and I'm just...
Yeah, how are we making formal commentary and saying things about memory and, 2 seconds in? All right.
Speaking of Nick and Ing and memory, Ing has our recap of last time.
Ooh!
Take it away,
solid, Ing. Solid segue.
Indeedy. You know, I tried some brandy or something with Cato. It was unique and delicious, and it turns out it served cold, at room temperature. Temperature! I looked it up, and it turns out that there's some other things that are usually warm, like soup, that are served cold, too. So brandy is kind of like the gazpacho of liquors, I guess. Not microwaved at all. Go figure. Anyway, I'm trying to get my mind straight. It's been a whirlwind of events recently. Let's see. The protest. The protest was getting to be a bit of a pressure cooker, thanks to Chief Lou Tapper and the presence of a tank named Kumiko. Byrne set off some biochaff as Kumiko backed off and ran down the street in the opposite direction from the protest. Cal left the line to intercept Kumiko, the tank. I'm letting that sink in. Cal, what were you thinking? Then again, I've only ever seen you run away from two things. Grief and the fear of grief. In any case, Hecate and I took this as a chance to run and join up with Cal on the way to see what Kumiko was chasing. And we arrived at the scene where Professor Culix Entwistle had allegedly thrown a brick through a window of some blowhard conservative newscaster named Max Brodrig. Brodrig tased Entwistle, and that's the escalation Kumiko was responding to. Cal confiscated the taser, told Kumiko that it was all handled, and sent Kumiko off on a wild goose chase. Wild tank chase? Entwistle got some medical care from an android named Mebby and Dev. Mebby was all business, so I exchanged information with Dev, and it seemed like things were calming down all around. But as we all headed back to the protest, there were the telltale rumble of an explosion. Cal arrived first and found a neon-masked figure in the smoke and rubble at PSS HQ. Kumiko is rushing towards the scene. Hecate and I are rushing towards the scene. I sense blood, sparks, and ash are in the future. Our worst fears are upon us. I pray that I'm wrong, and I don't think anyone's listening.
Very well done, and thank you.
No one may be hearing your prayers, but people do hear your exposition.
And... Yes, exactly. And some message in there somewhere. I like it.
We are going to get started, and I'm going to do something very pretentious. I am going to zoom in on the scene. So some narration, some description incoming. There's a column of smoke rising from PSS headquarters, but it doesn't rise like it would in a terrestrial environment. The slow spinning of the cylinder and the recirculation of air means that it's actually kind of trailing to one side and also sort of toward the center rail and then back down. Though no one in our group of player characters can see it from that view. But if we were to be looking down from the spinal railway of Grand Cross on this scene, we would see the billowing smoke coming up from not quite the center, but near the center of Selden District. And as we pull our view in down towards Selden District, we can see that there are many people in the streets, particularly in the vicinity of this column of smoke. There are some who are fleeing the scene, some who are helping each other up or out, some are conferring, others seem to be jostling one group to another. You'd also see coming in on a sort of intercept path a four-legged, roughly spider-shaped riot suppression tank galloping, without saying anything, towards the source of the smoke. You'd also see a very large android and an almost as large augmented human nearing the space where most of the pedestrians are concentrated, nearing where the smoke is coming from. You might, if you were very sharp-eyed, see some drones whizzing about overhead or crawling along nearby. And if you follow the smoke all the way back to its source, you would see an older PSS officer standing more or less alone, the nearest other person being a, for lack of a better word, costumed individual coming out of the aperture in the building that the explosion has created, wearing a fairly incongruous plague doctor mask and some dark kit that has red LED strips down the shoulders, sleeves, and pants legs. It is a dramatic, if somewhat cartoonish, figure looming out of the smoke and the steam. And amidst all the chaos, this moment between this officer and this figure is oddly quiet in the aftermath of this extremely loud explosion. We're going to pick up, I know we have some other things to see to, but we're going to pick up first with Cal beholding this figure sort of looming out of the smoke and the sprinkler steam and the shadow in the hole in the back wall of PSS headquarters. No one else has caught up to you just yet.
I casually rest my hand on my gun, not yet drawing it, but brace myself behind the riot shield and say, "You must be H, I take it."
The mask is frustrating here even more than the smoke, because all you can really see is that this figure sort of cocks their head. Whatever expression they may have is lost. But their response is to brandish some kind of short, single-edged blade that appears from behind them with a sort of flourish, and say in a heavily electronically distorted voice, "Don't know what you're talking about, but this could be fun." The figure takes two steps forward, holding what for all intents and purposes is like something between a saber and a machete out in front of them.
Yeah, I draw my gun. I don't want any trouble, kid, but you know what they say about bringing a blade to a gunfight.
The figure does sort of stop for a moment. Its head, their head, cocks in the other direction, and they laugh, which is a sort of discordant warble through their voice distortion. And they say, don't think that's going to help quite as much as you want it to.
You should know Kumiko is coming. Are you with Law Zero? An android, I take it?
They sigh, and the tip of the blade sort of clinks to the ground. And they say, all right, well, fun's over then. And start sprinting at a 45-degree angle to your left. This is about the point, Ing and Kato, where you are coming around the corner and you see this figure just kind of like take off, and you see sort of the back and side of Cal posted up.
Is it possible for me to take a shot at their legs without potentially firing at Ing or Kato?
Yeah, no, they're coming from a different angle than this is going to be actually.
Okay, I'm going to try to take them out.
The geometric wonder of triangles.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So I anticipate that the combat move that you're going to be doing here is pin down, making a ranged attack, then pin your target down to the beginning of the next turn. If that target takes any action that doesn't involve getting into or staying in cover, including moving, if they're not moving into cover, you may take an additional ranged attack against it.
I'm minimal to that. However, I am trying to shoot them in the legs.
I do understand that. Okay. I am picking the move first. That's okay. There is not a called
go
shot
for the kneecaps
here.
Right.
That is go for distinct the eyes. From just ooh. Making you know, a ranged attack here. Now, this arena has the tag distracting because of all the smoke and steam and debris mm-hmm. and sprinklers and such. So you are going to make any ranged attacks at disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So you're going to roll in order to attack 2d6 plus quick.
Okay. And do I also add my perk for my gun go pew pew.
That sounds like you will be adding it, but I need to still scroll to it in order to tell you.
What a name.
It is, in fact, connected to.
Yes. Okay. Yes. You would also add your plus two for my gun go pew pew.
Okay. So plus four. I got a 5 and a 4. So that's 9
you
plus 4.
You need
is
to
6.
Roll an additional die for disadvantage and take the two lowest.
Okay. There we go. Apologies, you said disadvantage, and then so it's still going to be a 5 and a 4 because I rolled another 5.
Okay, 5 and a 4 plus your four is 13. All right, so you fire at this figure's legs, and pretty immediately. You sense that your guess that this individual might be an android is likely to be accurate, because the rounds that do hit their legs sort of spark and ping. And for their part, your target sort of takes a stumbling, leaping roll behind a municipal garbage can, and sort of yells in that distorted warble, "Come on, officer, I was trying to leave the scene." Now, Kato, Ing, you also have the opportunity for some actions here.
I'd like to just trail and observe.
Okay.
Which doesn't mean that I'm staying out of danger. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to make sure that if this person gets away from this scene, mm-hmm. then not from my perception. So okay. trying to perhaps cut them off, perhaps send the drone swarm out, mm-hmm. something to get out and ahead, but not necessarily trying to stop them from fleeing the scene.
Can we okay. still cut this person off? We are two large people.
Yeah, well, if you...
roughly this way.
Hustle. So if you can envision it, at the bottom of the sort of map area, put the point where they were standing before they started running. Mm-hmm. And then
along a line about 45 degrees toward the left of our, you know, sort of active area, is the trajectory that they were on when Cal shot at them. And Kato and Ing, you have come around sort of into the right hand side of this, you know, sort of area. So there's Cal in front of you, and then beyond Cal, but not quite as far up from the bottom, in quotation marks, where the perp started, you know, and then that's where they're on, in cover on the other side of Cal.
Okay, yeah. So I think a fiddler crab NB the size of an industrial refrigerator is going to try and intercept the fleeing person.
Very good. Ing, I would like first a robotics roll from you. Clever plus robotics for you is plus 6. So 2d6 plus 6 to incorporate your drone swarm effectively into this surveillance in short notice.
Ooh, that is snake eyes. 1 and 1.
All right. So plus
6.
Whatever. You are a little bit frazzled in that you are trying to pull your swarm in from a variety of directions in the sky and on the ground and, you know, sort of position them. And I mean, it's taking shape, but it is going less efficiently than you would want it to.
I might also add that in the wake of that explosion, it's kind of stirring up some memories for me that in the wake of an explosion, there's just kind of a lot of flashbacks of blood and gunfire and repudiation. It's just kind of all swarming in at the same time, the past intruding onto the present for me.
Certainly limiting your bandwidth to manage your collective with. Then, Kato. I think at this time, we are not necessarily going to have you make a combat move because you're going to spend this whole turn just sort of sprinting.
Yeah,
makes sense. You know, kind of across the active play area. Next time, you know, we may pinpoint either grab or rush as your moves. If you have the rulebook, those are on page 45. Now, Burn, while this is going on, you are hunkered down in the basement and have just lost your camera, you know, sort of panopticon on the area around PSSHQ with a cheeky little message that said, sorry, smiley face, you know, superimposed on the footage. You've had a brief exchange via sort of IM with K and B, who has not filled you with confidence, suffice to say.
Yep.
Anything in the short term?
I will respond to K&B with, look, at a minimum, I need to know where my fucking people are.
K&B responds with, cameras are out for me too, but I'll see if I can't find out who did it. In the meantime, if you need eyes, probably hoof it. With a little slanty frown face in that message. It's a series of message, not all one message.
Thank you. Period.
Thumbs up emoji.
Like, very period. Aggressive, period.
Mm-hmm. No, I got it, and so did K&B. Since thumbs up emoji, period.
Nice.
All right. So, all of this happening very quickly. Let's head back around to the backside of PSS. Now, Cal, you have the top of the order. Your target has taken cover behind a trash can.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to shout back at them. Leaving so soon after detonating a bomb. I thought you said that was going to be fun.
Their distorted voice warbles back. Oh, I didn't detonate anything, but, you know, still fun. Not unlike paintball. Kato, I feel like your primary options for your completing your intention from last time are rush or maybe grab. there on page 45. Do you have a preference?
Let's see. I think it comes down to whether the target is roughly the same size as me, which the
smaller
target is not, I believe. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to try for a grab.
Okay. So, the first thing I guess I need from you is a melee attack, which in your case is going to be 2d6 plus tough at plus one. Do you have, I don't think you have any particular specialties that we'll be applying here, but let me know if I'm incorrect about that.
I don't think so. Yeah, we've never used either of the specialty arms in a combat situation. Presumably the work arm gives me more reach than is normal, but yeah, beyond that, we've never really, you know, had to deal with it mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you that roll and we'll figure it out from there.
Sounds good.
That is a 6 and a 1, plus 1 is 8.
Okay. You come around sort of the top of the environment I was describing last time and barrel into sort of around the side of the trash can that this individual is using for cover, and you make sort of a big grab, and the figure behind the trash can is not like small by absolute standards, but smaller than you know, size of a slightly larger than average, like baseline human, but is quite nimble and attempts essentially to kick the trash can over in your direction. This does not exactly pan out as it just sort of spins out a little bit, but it does propel you past this figure while the target of your grab sort of scoots out of your direct line. And one of the disadvantages of being big is having inertia. So you have to sort of scramble to stop and turn around. Ing, you are still engaged with trying to sort of establish monitoring here. But the outcome of Kato's failed grab here is that the target of your grab is attempting to turn the tables on you and use this short sword, I guess, that they have on you. Let's see. I think this is going to be in the offing a distract roll. So Kato, this is going to be versus your quick defense.
Okay.
Which I think is baseline.
I think I have quick plus three, don't I? Oh, the defense. Right. That's correct. Yeah. Defense is baseline.
I don't think many of us have really gone much into defense.
I have some cool defense, due to my various criminal activities, but anyway, it doesn't help me here.
So yeah, I'll be rolling against your quick defense of 10 here with this character's melee attack, which is also a quick in their case. Get back to the appropriate section. I'm going to make this lovely rolling sound. All right. So they do attempt to use this trash can maneuver to sort of give you a distraction while they try to slash at you, but you are, you know, sort of situationally aware enough to scramble in a slightly crab-like way out of the way of the slash, even as the trash can sort of sails through your space.
I probably shout as this is happening, a combination of swears and also just an unintelligible rant.
Well, that does actually bring it back around to your action as well.
Oh, we're not checking in with the burn again?
I mean, this is happening quite a lot more rapidly than everything that's happening with burn.
Oh, okay.
So we're managing the time scale as best I can.
The thing to make note of is that the last time you used the pin down action, so you'll need to use a different action this time.
Okay. I am going to try to distract this individual. I'm going to make a ranged attack and also say, hey, don't you think your attention should be on the cops that are trying to arrest you?
Sure. Remember that that ranged attack is still a disadvantage because of the arena tags. So roll three dice and take the two lowest.
Really? Oh. Well, that sucks. I had a five, but then I had a three and a two, so nine.
All right. And on top of that, they'll need to make a cool save or become distracted. Let's see. All right. So while they do manage to, you know, sort of leap a little bit and not get hit by your fire, they are baited into paying attention to your conversation and say, cops, well, I only see the one, and I guess two vigilantes. Where are your friends anyway?
The speak and spell voice got me.
Getting a little bit better at it. In the meantime, the turn that they have is going to come after Kato's. Sorry. Kato gets first. So you can't grab again. But
can't grab again. Can I try to close the distance? Or is this this individual, I mean, sure. Donzo.
Yeah, you can rush. That's fine.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, so take your melee attack roll once again.
Okay. That's 5 and a 3 plus 1, so 9.
Okay. And let's see, they have to make a tough save as well. So you don't inflict any injury, but let's see. They do get pushed over. So that's going to mean that further melee attacks have advantage, but until the beginning of their next turn, ranged attacks against them have disadvantage. Now, that's actually funny because they go next. So doesn't really factor in quite as much.
That sucks.
They are... It's not ideal. I mean, at the very least, Cal, your next ranged attack won't have disadvantage against them as a result.
Oh, it still has disadvantage.
Well, okay, you're correct. It won't have double disadvantage. You won't have to roll 4 and take the lowest 2.
Would they be like, I know typically they're prone until the beginning of the next round.
I am reading the language right now. It says the beginning of their next turn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tragedy.
So physically, I've somewhat pinned them, but they're just real slippery. Let's trying see. To, you know, translate the mechanics into
sure
a visual, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So they are going to take the move, run away. So this is 2d6 plus their quick versus 7 plus the number of opponents, which I'm going to count in, and that's going to be 3. So they need to beat a 10 on this, and if they don't, then everybody gets a free attack against them to determine whether they actually get away or not. So here goes. I actually have to look it up here because I forget if ties go to the roller or not. Let me double check here. Equal to or higher than. All right. Yeah, they got a 10 exactly. So
hate to see it.
Let's see.
If you succeed, you're out. All right. So they take to their heels, and they're not unpursuable, but they essentially take this uncomfortable looking crouching sprint into sort of like the nearest aperture between structures and are out of immediate line of sight. The trick here is that they don't bother to get up before they do this. You know, after having been knocked down by Kato, they just scramble on all fours, starting to rise as they go.
They are the crab eater walker.
This is kind of turned into a little bit of a crab off.
It was always going to end this way.
Yeah, it was inevitable, like carcinization.
Yeah, so I sort of say, gotcha, and then, I'm getting out scuttled here.
That happened on air.
A rare acknowledgement of crabness.
I love it.
So let's get the rundown, I guess, of reactions to this. Broadly speaking, Cal, you can go after the escaping perp, or you can head into PSS HQ. Obviously, the hole in the wall will still be there later, but it won't be as unobserved as it is now.
I guess it's important to note that, to my knowledge, the cameras aren't down. So I'm assuming very much that the kid still has eyes on everything. So this clearly more spry than me android, because they are an android. Chasing after them would be like chasing multiple rabbits. Mm-hmm. I think, given that a bomb just went off, I need to take stock of the situation, figure out if it, well, confirm that the kids that were previously detained are fine, and look around and see who else may or may not be injured.
Okay. All right. So you're heading in, and we'll get to that in just one moment. Mm-hmm. Kato, pursuing or investigating?
I think if anyone's going to keep pursuing, it should probably be me, because I'm no more than two unsuccessful grabs away from this person. So I think my snap decision is I continue pursuing, probably out of a certain carcinal pride. Is that
and
not carceral? That's important,
right? But yeah, Cal.
Before I go in, I forgot to mention that I'm going to say into my radio, and knowing full well the kid can hear this on the still going phone call, that the perp is heading in whatever direction, down whatever street. Civilians appear to be working to help detain them. They claim not to have set off the bomb, but are still worth bringing in for questioning.
Good deal.
Having heard all of this, can I access cameras along the relevant street?
Yes, far enough out from PSSHQ. The ones you can't access, of course, are just powered off. They're inoperable currently. So it is the work of a few moments to access the cameras along this predicted route, but it appears that this individual has not reached where the cameras are active yet. That said, you have an eye out. Several.
Yep.
In fact. Ing, I assume that you are still trying to sort of like task your drones with monitoring this escapee from the scene. But what are you doing with your personal self?
Yes, correct. So I'd like to send my drones to try to help in the tracking of this individual, not necessarily interfering with their escape, even if I could. With my physical self, let's see. I try to catch Cal's eye and say, how can I help? Not to pass the buck, but passing the buck.
Sure.
I catch your eye and nod And with what's probably translating on my face right now, no small degree of stress. Make sure Kato's okay.
All right. I follow Kato.
All right. Good deal. Let's handle... Well, we did sort of check in with Burn via Cal communicating with them, but other than taking up the surveillance of the predicted route of this perp, is there anything else that you are currently getting up to?
I am letting people, like letting basement dwellers know that there was an explosion at PSS. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't be in that fucking area. Also, whoever the fuck H is that turned off my cameras, die in a fire.
You have a burner account that you can respond to with anything you wish to say directly to H. If it's die in a fire, then you can send that. But
oh no, this is stated publicly.
Oh, I see. Good deal.
Whoever you are, wherever you are today.
You who turned off my cameras today, just now, in view of this explosion that I am therefore blaming you for.
Mm-hmm. So we are going to take the two simultaneous developments here by turns. And we're going to start with Cal going into PSSHQ via this blown up hole in the back wall. There isn't really much fire left. The sprinklers have seen to that. There is still quite a bit of smoke and steam, so pretty obscured, which maybe works both for and against you. But sort of, you know, stepping carefully into the confines of PSSHQ, you quickly observe that the explosion was beneath an empty holding cell and took out the floor and three walls of that holding cell. Hmm. The floor part is crucial because the next holding cell over, one of the walls that got blown out, seems to have been where at least one of the detained members of Slagpie was being held. And they are not there currently, nor is the other member of Slagpie who was being held, you would hazard to guess, in the now opened holding cell across the way from the one that got partially damaged. If you had to guess, they went into the basements through this hole in the floor.
I'm going to say that out loud for the benefit of the call.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For the benefit of prying ears.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little weird that there don't seem to be any people in this area. Like, there should have been a couple of officers inside that could have either been caught in this blast or responded to it. Notable that there are not.
That is weird. I'm gonna try to, I guess, go deeper to figure out where the personnel is in the building. Mm-hmm. How far is the blast radius? I imagine it only affected the cell, and then...
It looks like structural damage was within a 20-foot diameter. The device seems to have been very carefully placed. You're not a demolitions expert, but given what it affected, you wouldn't be surprised if it was actually affixed to the bottom of the foundation from the basements.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should throw in there that you happen to know that the basement infrastructure areas under PSS are actually surveilled and access controlled. But whoever did this seems to have either been able to circumvent those or to have, perhaps it was an inside job.
I'm narrating this out loud.
Okay.
At a grumble the whole time and stop when I start proceeding deeper into PSS.
Okay. We will pick up with you as you proceed past this initial tableau after we check in with our pursuit. Now, Ing, it took your drones a minute to get marshaled your attention and just kind of general with-itness was a little scattered, but you're sort of starting to kind of center yourself again, and the collective is zooming ahead to try to figure out exactly where this plague masked individual is and where they're heading. Meanwhile, I'd love to get from Kato a quick roll.
All right.
2d6 plus 3.
That is 9 plus 3 is 12.
All right. Give a quick roll, a literal, for our fleeing suspect. Okay. You are able to keep them in sight, but you don't feel that you are gaining ground. They are smaller with less inertia, and they are taking some tight turns through these alleyways, seemingly deliberately. Ing, you're
I say to the nearest drone, I'm not sure about this.
Ing, your groundbound drones are just about keeping pace with Kato, but your aerial drones are able to catch relatively frequent snippets of the fleeing suspect, helped out by the glowing LED strips on their outfit. And you sort of bring up the rear in your own personal body. It seems as though the suspect is doing more of trying to lose a tail than trying to get anywhere in particular. Unless anywhere in particular is somewhere that the two of you are unaware of, which is possible, at the very least. Burn, you have gotten some information from Cal. This does not demand particular action on your part, but I just wanted to check in with you before we move back around.
I will add that apparently the device was set off from beneath, from the basement, so, like, if you don't want to encounter the cops, don't fucking be here.
Mm-hmm.
Through all of my basement dweller channels.
Okay.
For my part, I am also heading away from PSS headquarters.
Okay.
Probably toward, like, the district edge.
Okay. Good to know. At about this time,
I will update Cal and Kato that I am possibly stepping outside of PSS jurisdiction.
All right. Around this time, it'll be very faint for Cal, so probably you will notice it, though it may take you a minute to place it. Kato, Ing, you'll also hear this more clearly. Burn, as you are in the basements and moving away, you won't. Automatic gunfire is happening somewhere in the vicinity. Ing, in particular, with the benefit of your aerial drones, you can also hear the sounds of panic people, though they will not carry to inside PSS or in the alleyways or in the basements. This gives particularly Kato and Ing, though second order perhaps Cal, an opportunity to react to this sound, these sounds in Ing's case. You do not have to, of course. You have other things you're doing, but
I'd like to send the smallest, maybe four members of my flying swarm, continuing after the suspect, but going for surreptitious, maybe one of them very obvious and the others trying to make it seem like the suspect has lost pursuit. And the others trying to lull him into a false sense of security. And actually continue to pursue.
Okay.
The remainder of the swarm, I would like to zone in on that gunfire.
All right. As you start to triangulate, it becomes clear that it is coming from the intersection in front of PSS HQ. Kato, particular reaction?
Yeah, I think that sound knocks me out of the reverie of this probably hopeless foot pursuit. Like, shit. And alert the Fixer network, you know, that that things seem to continue to be escalating. Yeah.
Okay.
And see if anyone knows anything more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
See if I can shout to Kato. Change appliance. Mm-hmm. Got to go back.
Yeah. With you.
So it's can I tell that the fire is coming from towards the front of PSS from where I am? Would it be faster for me to push through the building?
I'm going to rule that whereas if I in my real life human body were in this scenario, I would probably mistake it for coming from the back of the building because that's where the opening is. Mm-hmm. And so it would sound kind of a little more immediate from there, that you have experience as Cal that I do not and would be able to figure out that this was coming from the front. And so, yes, pushing through PSS HQ is going to be probably the higher like likelihood, the better percentage for you.
Okay. So I'm going to push through. That takes priority.
Okay. And I'll add that I say, yeah, with you. And then I say, fuck. I'll close as behind as I can be.
Burn.
Yes.
About 5 seconds after the actions we have just described, you will get on your camera feeds monitoring the route that the escapee was taking a very quick dash of red LEDs out of an alley across the street at an angle to a basement entrance, and they disappear into the basements. You can mark the entrance that they used.
Yeah, I do. And telegraph to others that perps in the basement's not near me.
Good deal. Okay. So other than Burn, our other three are largely heading towards the sound of gunfire by their various means, with the exception of parts of the collective, which are presumably still heading in the general direction of the basement entrance that our suspect just used.
Yeah, and I'd like to retcon that Tran was put in charge of the continuing pursuit.
Okay. Good to know.
A show of trust.
Yeah. First independent mission.
They grow sentient so fast.
Well said.
Kato and Ng and parts of the collective, you are heading towards the front of PSS HQ, but from a little further away since your pursuit course was kind of orthogonal to, you know, the direction that you'd now be heading. Cal, you move from kind of the back areas of PSS HQ through into more of the front areas. It's not a huge sprawling complex. It's got a fair amount of square footage, but it's kind of a the word that comes to mind here is squart little rectangle. Thus, it is that very quickly you make your way from where the holding cells have been emptied into what would be sort of the employee and utility sections just before you get to the public-facing areas, at which were, you know, proximate to the intersection where the protest was taking place. You were brought up short as you come into this area because the hallway you're taking leads you directly past Lou Tupper's office, and the man himself is in evidence. He is slouched against the wall next to the door to his office, which hangs slightly ajar. The lights inside are off. And the first thing that you notice is there's a fair amount of blood. It's pretty obvious where it's coming from. There is a Deep enough to be worrying slash wound from his right shoulder to about his solar plexus. It's unclear exactly what state he is in, though you can see that his hand is a death grip on his communicator.
I'm going to quickly pivot into his office and give a kick to his leg that could not be described as gentle.
All right. So just to make sure I am on the same page, you are bringing him into his office?
Oh, he's just outside of his office.
Yes. He's slouched against the wall just outside of his office door.
I missed that. I am not bringing him into his office. I am stopping short and giving him a quick, we'll call it a well check with my foot.
Sure. let's get a clever plus cool head roll. That's an unusual combination, but that's going to be 2d6 plus 4.
Okay. So 6 plus 4 is 10.
Okay. So you clock pretty quickly that he's still breathing, though it is pretty labored. His eyes look a little glassy, but as you sort of nudge him with your foot and give him a once over, he blinks a couple times and his eyes swim around a little bit before they lock on you. And he takes a really deep kind of labored breath, seemingly in preparation of saying something. Though you do have a chance to do whatever you're going to do next before he gets the words out.
I just ask if he knows who it was.
He lets part of the breath he just took out in a hacking laugh. He goes, some fucking Renfair goddamn piece of a little sword. You gonna patch me up or what?
There's gunfire up front. Are you stable?
I don't fucking know. It's like your hands are cold. It's just my luck. This officer fucking Armitage.
I smirk. I wouldn't call it luck.
He makes a sound that you think was an attempt at a snorted laugh, but it doesn't really come together. And he says with less energy, guess you're just gonna stand there and watch me bleed out then? Didn't think I was that bad a boss.
Lou.
Chief Tupper. To you.
Not right now. Not in this moment. Hurts, doesn't it?
You think? You ever had a wound like this, Armitage?
I reach up and tap the side of my head, letting my knuckles ring off the metal there. Yeah. Worse.
Of course. Always gotta be the baddest ass in the room. Makes you wonder why you weren't a better cop.
It's a question you should have asked yourself long ago.
Question I'm asking myself right now is, why aren't you getting out that first aid kit
You literally always have on you.
I reach up to my vest and unhook it dramatically, holding it loose on one finger just out of reach. It's a good question. Probably the smartest one you've asked yet.
Oh, good. Still getting some blood to my fucking brain. What is it? Just one too many staff meetings? A little too much overtime for your delicate constitution?
Delicate constitution, that's rich. It's the first time someone's ever paid me that compliment. Usually the opposite. Huh? No, hired Lou.
Fucking women.
What did you think of that audio outside?
He goes still. He's not been moving a lot, but his face has been pretty animated. And when you ask that question, he gets a guarded look as though he's a little more focused than he has been. And he sort of rolls his head to one side to regard you more easily, actually looking at you steadily now. And he says, I think it's a crock of shit.
Do you remember that kid?
What the? Yeah, I guess.
Never thought to ask any questions about him?
Fucking malcontent, robo-loving. His head sort of dips and he recovers and he says, why? You knew him?
Never thought to ask if he had family. Never thought to dig deeper into his name.
Not in orbit. I just... And then you can almost see the penny drop in his head. He goes, fucking hell. And he just thunks his head back against the wall. He goes, well, if you're looking to shoot me, you're running out of time.
No, Lou. The plan was never to shoot you. The plan was to make sure that when you wind up in hell, there's nothing in this life that you look fondly back on.
Oh, well, gonna look a little more fondly back on giving you demerits, that's for fucking sure. He sort of sighs, head dips forward, he like snaps it back up, he goes, no, this isn't gonna change shit after this shit show. It's just gonna be IMX.
It's the only reason I've kept you around for so long.
Oh, this the great and powerful cow.
Maybe you'd prefer a different name and face. I activate my holographic projection armor.
The sound of it coming on seems to kind of pull him back into a greater level of lucidity. And he focuses with a lot of blinking and he goes,
son of a bitch. Oh, that's rich. You know what? I'll give you that one, Armitage. All this other posturing, it's bullshit. But that stings. How long?
Since the beginning.
Shit. Should have just...
He sort of lolls his head to one side.
Should have just stayed Earthside.
Yeah, Lou. You really should have.
You working with that beak motherfucker?
Out of character, beak motherfucker referring to the plague doctor mask dude, or...
Beak with a K, yes.
Beak, okay. I heard beat.
Same.
My Tupper accent is all over the place, so understandable. Okay.
And also, he's dying, hopefully. So
yeah, We're kind of banking on that at this point.
It seems pretty clear to you, for the record, that without some kind of treatment, he's probably done for. The only contingency is nobody has showed up yet. But if somebody does show up to give him, like, you know, emergency attention, then an ICU could fix this up.
Hmm. That's good input to have.
He's a fixable problem either way.
Yeah, 100%. Just got to decide the method of fixing, I suppose. I shake my head once in response to that question. Say, no, that one's new to me. Looks like the masked vigilantes are spreading.
Vigilantes. Some fucking Law Zero cartel something. Just everybody wants what great men have.
No great men here. Blue.
He snorts a laugh and then starts to cough weakly. And he's gonna lose consciousness soon. But the lag time between him losing consciousness and him being unsalvageable is beyond your expertise to pinpoint precisely.
I am going to... I'm going to tase him.
All right.
Just recreationally.
Recreationally. Jesus.
The most Cal has sounded like a cop in quite a while.
Yeah. So you pull out your taser, and he doesn't seem to register it immediately.
You also have the one you confiscated.
Yes. And that will be the one that I intend to use.
All right. Yeah. So you pull out your confiscated taser, and he doesn't see what's happening right away. He's, you know, out of it, his eyes half closed. But your movement evidently gets his attention enough that he sort of pulls his head back up and goes, "You are fucking..." And then you... unleash the taser on him. And he jerks limply and then loses consciousness. Probably, if you had to guess, your time is short. If you want to do anything in particular with the unconscious and continuously bleeding Lou Tupper.
Is there anything in my first aid kit that would either accelerate him bleeding out or ensure that he would not be, he'll have shuffled off his mortal coil by the time other people arrive?
You have a fairly serious first aid kit, for lack of a better term.
Because the other option is just to clamp my hand over his mouth and nose. And
sure. I'm trying to reason here. I suppose that the options that come to my non-physician mind from this are, you've got aspirin, which would, you know, make it harder for his blood to clot. But would not be, like, without a trace in the event of an autopsy. It seems to me unlikely that you have enough of any serious painkiller to just overdose him on it in a first aid kit, especially since they don't typically have, like, just straight up morphine in them. But, you know, if the goal is maybe to asphyxiate him, you have some
options in terms of trauma kit stuff, you know, that may serve as like a barrier between you and him, or, you know, something that you could like set and forget while you get out away from the scene. Otherwise, I guess you probably do have like a scalpel and some hemostats if you just, you know, added a smaller wound to the larger wound that could do the trick.
I'll go for that option.
Okay. There isn't a role involved here, and I certainly wish to leave the sort of tonality of it to you, but what you have is essentially a small, very sharp scalpel blade. The wound that he's got passes relatively near where his heart is, but doesn't go through the ribs. So what you would be doing to be most effective here is probably either trying to use it to puncture a lung pretty decisively, or directly into one of the ventricles of his heart.
I'll leave it to your judgment here, but I'm going to go with whatever is most logical for appearing as though the machete went slightly deeper, or the sword.
Yeah,
is sure to do the job.
Okay. You think about it for a second and decide that the best you can do with what you've got in a hurry is follow the sort of direction of the slash, and sort of at one edge, basically you try to make it look like the angle of the blade changed in the course of the slash and went a little deeper between two ribs. Mm-hmm. And you think you get his aorta. The blood flow increases dramatically. And again, your educated but not expert opinion is that he'll probably be dead in 2 minutes, and any intervention in that time is unlikely to result in him surviving.
And can I haul him into his office and lock it behind me?
Certainly. Yeah.
I do that really quickly. And mm-hmm. then continue towards the gunfire.
One last question. What, if anything, are you doing with the scalpel that you used for this?
Taking it with me. I'm still in uniform.
Sure. Just making sure I know precisely.
I do wipe it off.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then locking the door behind you, you head in the direction that you were going. Now, this has taken a moment. And in the meantime, some other things have been happening. In the meantime, Cato, you had angled in the direction of the automatic gunfire. After, let's call it 5 seconds of running, it becomes intermittent but does not let up. Ing, you and the better part of the collective are similarly, you know, sort of angling from your own triangulation around PSS back to where this sound is coming from. And before we catch up to where in the timeline, as it were, Cal is, both of you will, Cato personally and Ing through some drones running ahead, get eyes on the intersection. Now, it is not at all clear to you what has precipitated this, but the scene that you behold is of a line of a half dozen PSS officers on either side of Kumiko, who is standing kind of posted up, legs extended for height, and each of the small machine gun turrets that can deploy from within Kumiko's chassis are extended and swiveling and firing when they detect a target. Target-wise, this seems to be people attempting to withdraw from this intersection. There are few people still there who aren't suffering from one or more gunshot wounds. The number is indeterminate, but the mass of folks who are there have apparently fled before this threat of a fully deployed Kumiko. The PSS officers on either side don't seem to be doing much other than staying close to and flanking Kumiko and looking around, heads on a swivel. And what you see occasioning the sporadic gunfire from one or the other or both of the turrets are essentially people attempting to move from one alley or doorway alcove or similar space further away from the intersection.
I think I've got to sprint towards the tank.
Okay.
I probably take a moment to notice that Aang is sprinting toward the tank, and then also sprint toward Aang, and therefore toward the tank.
All right.
If only to stop Aang from getting too close to the tank, but we'll see if that's even possible.
The angles that each of you have toward Kumiko are not in sort of the primary line of fire across the intersection and down to the four sort of ways out of this intersection. But it's probably only a matter of time, Aang, before you draw the tank's attention as you are, on an intercept course. So, Kato, I guess my question is, are you attempting to physically intervene in Aang's process?
Potentially. I think the first thing I do is just call out. I say, what's the plan here? Are you going to fight a tank?
For the first time since deliberately wiping my combat subroutines, I try to remember how I might stop a tank.
Fascinating. Okay, I just want you to roll 1d6 and tell me what you get.
That is a 6.
Okay. Oh boy. Nick, would you be so kind as to meet yourself here and follow me over to Discord for a moment?
Can do.
It's about that time in the campaign.
It is.
For an ascension.
Rich tradition around these parts. Oh, if he ascends, I swear to Dask.
Many people will be swearing to Dask.
Don't do it! At least this time.
So, here's the thing. With a 6, I wanted to give you an option. We can have Aang recall some, snippet of combat subroutine and, make a series of rolls to try to utilize it in... I don't know what I'd maybe call it, John Wickian fashion, and just see how it happens.
Yep.
I wanted to give you the option, though, if you think it is an idea that you like and is, I don't know, if this is the moment for it, that we can have it such that Aang, per se, just loses consciousness here. And Aang's combat subroutines take over, and whatever happens, man, happens.
Yeah. Both are good options. Give me a sec to process between the two.
Take your time. Yeah.
Oh boy, the looks on faces here.
I'm trying not to look.
All right, I'll stop mentioning it then.
I think Let's go with the second of the two. I think that's the more dramatic of the two. I think both have possibility. I could see, you know, grappling with trying and failing. But yeah, I think that I black out.
Okay. All right. Kato, the response you get is inscrutable. For a brief moment, without pausing at all, Ing looks in your direction with, like, Ing's whole countenance is not that expressive or mobile by human standards, but you get a sort of, here's a fun question. How much of Kato can still get goosebumps?
30%.
All right.
That is like 30% higher than I thought.
This is going to be an odd question. Which 30%? Give me maybe the two most contiguous locales that can still get goosebumps.
Thighs.
All time championship interjections.
It's just thighs, and those thighs thick, though. There probably is, in fact, a strip of leg that's still something like flesh. And that's probably the most contiguous spot. But I would say, actually, I've preserved places that can get goosebumps, if only in little bits. 30% may be a high estimate. But if you're looking at areas of the body, there's at least a third of them that have something on them that are capable of goosebumps. And that's by design.
Okay. All of them do get goosebumps. I suppose it's up to you whether or not the sensation of goosebumps concentrated on some leg makes you stumble in this case. But something is a little off about Ing's face. And it really just instantly hits you full force. And in that moment, Ing's body language changes from person running to machine accelerating. And before you have a whole lot of time to process or anticipate, Ing crashes into the half dozen PSS officers on the near side of Kumiko. The turrets have started to swivel in Ing's direction, but have not begun firing by the time his chassis gets essentially inside of their firing arc. The PSS officers are, what's the word I want to use here? A twitter at his approach, but end up sort of being sprawled out collectively in one way or another, some leaning against Kumiko, others falling on the ground, others just stumbling backwards. The ones on the other side don't seem to realize exactly what's happened yet, but Ing sort of does a ducking slide underneath Kumiko and catches something on the underside of Kumiko's chassis, and you hear the tearing of metal. Now, in this brief interval, have you changed your actions at all, or are you still on an intercept course with Kumiko?
I am not. I am taking cover at this point.
Okay.
Something changed the moment I saw Ing's face, and I realized that whatever the outcome, there's about to be shooting, an explosion, shrapnel, something violent is about to occur. So I am trying to get out of the line of it, and I'm saying, shit.
Loud and clear.
Maybe not. Maybe not loud and clear in world, but well, yes, that's what's happening.
To me, it's loud and clear. You can't tell from your vantage point exactly what is causing the noise that Ing is doing. But in the next couple of moments, a few tear gas grenades that PSS officers were carrying start billowing from their harnessing, evidently the devices were activated without them moving, from their sort of tactical webbing. And so the PSS officers, whose riot gear does not include gas masks, immediately begin to yell and cough and stagger on both sides of Kumiko. Kumiko is moving in a sort of uncertain, stomping, not quite circle, and you hear more screeching of metal on metal. The tear gas billows, and you can't see very much, though you can see the muzzle flashes as Kumiko's turrets begin to flash, and you hear the reports, and you duck back down behind cover because it seems like they may be just firing wildly. Then they stop, and you hear some metallic stretching and popping. And then, for the first time in an interval, you hear the PA system on Kumiko begin to speak up. It says, "Please refrain from damaging this unit. This unit is doing its level best to try and maintain order in this area, and you're..." Followed by some clanking sounds. Tear gas is still obscuring your vision, and you've lost sight of Ing entirely. It's eerily quiet now that the intersection is mostly deserted, the distraction having afforded everyone who was hiding from the line of fire GTFO.
I don't dive for the tank, but I don't GTFO either. I send the group a quick message, knowing that that could include Ing, and say, "I'm safe, and I think Ing is in the tank." Doing great work, it should be said. If there's a moment of silence after that, then I do call out for Ing.
Okay.
Ing! That was impressive, but are you square, buddy?
No immediate response, and we'll check back in with the two of you in just a moment. Cal.
Mm-hmm.
About the time that you emerge from the front of PSS HQ is about the time that the last sound of screeching metal is fading away. So you hear Kato call into the silence, unbroken but for the retching of PSS officers in the vicinity of the tear gas grenades. Burn?
Immediately after receiving the "I'm safe, but" text, do I have anything that's recording sound on Kato?
I don't think so.
We've probably discussed this. We don't have an open bug. But
yeah.
I can turn on a recorder if I want to be recorded. And that's often, but not all the time.
Yeah,
certainly not if we're at a protest. I'm not recording myself.
Then when I see "in the tank," I will just say, "Remember crime names," in quotation marks.
I see that just after calling out for Ing and go, "Shit."
Cal?
I am quickly donning my gas mask. Mm-hmm. And stripping my uniform of any form of identification, mm-hmm. and sprinting into the smoke and gas. Okay. After Ing. I'm not calling out Ing's name, though.
Of course, yeah.
No, you're not an idiot.
Mm-hmm. So you sprint into the tear gas. It is slow to dissipate because there were, a handful of these gas grenades sort of going off within a area smaller than the room I'm sitting in right now. There's not a lot of breeze currently in this part of the station. But you do get, you know, sort of directly to the heart of the cloud here, and you see that by some means, apparently Ying has stripped a panel that's usually fairly well concealed from the underside of Kumiko's chassis and pulled the cyberpunk equivalent of an entire fuse board out, and then found the weakest point of articulation on the retractable gun turrets and snapped them off. Kumiko has not deactivated, but has kind of gone into an SOS mode. There is a small flashing light going that you assume accompanies a wireless transmission for help. It is not entirely disabled, but is ineffectual presently. Now, Nick, Ing is in this vicinity. You have started to sort of come back to yourself. You're surrounded by coughing and wheezing PSS officers and the sort of slowly creaking and whirring form of Kumiko, and you can hear the footfalls as you see a gas-masked Cal emerge from the cloud of tear gas in front of you. How does Cal find you?
I think wandering out from the tank in a random direction, looking fairly dazed and disoriented, looking but not seeing the things around around them.
Mm-hmm. Kid, it's me. I'm approaching with my hands out in an open gesture. We got to get out of here. We got to go.
Yeah. All right. I follow kind of on autopilot.
Cal, where do you lead?
Phone pings with directions to a basement entrance.
I take Ing's arm. If I'm permitted to, like, slowly at first, and then all at once, and give a squeeze with my hand and guide them towards the basement entrance, allowing them to lean on me as much or as little as needed.
At your touch, there's an initial flinch as this 7-foot-tall robot, seems surprised and injured. And then doesn't shrink away further, though.
At the flinch, I murmur, "I got you, kid."
Kato, your phone also pings with coordinates or directions to the basement entrance. Different one.
Yeah. I start making my way, I mutter.
As you make your way, two figures almost simultaneously come sprinting into the square from different sort of tributary roads. I keep saying square. It's at a broad intersection. One is the cat girl medic that was at the protest before. Her cat attendant sort of at her heels. And the other you recognize from Near Event Horizon, the EMT android that had come out of the basement, sprinting into the square from a different angle. Not exactly synchronously, but very sort of similar timing, suggesting that both were waiting in the wings to sort of come and attend to the wounded when it was safe. The pair of Cal and Ing approach one basement entrance, and Cato approaches another as this tear gas slowly dissipates and the PSS officers in the vicinity of Kumiko start to get to their feet and figure out what has exactly happened. There are shouts of alarm being raised from the vicinity of PSS HQ as it seems that others have made their way in, discovered the escape of the prisoners, and maybe even the fate of Lou Tupper. Burn.
Less urgently than the directions to the basement entrances, I give directions from each of them to where I am, sort of midway between them.
All right. As the basement entrances close over those who are making their way into the basements, perhaps one of the last things you'll perceive is veritable swarms of drones in the area, sort of coming down to cover the events here in their aftermath. And in particular, Ing, you are not exactly with it right now, but you are aware in an oddly sort of clear way that comes from your attention sort of not being focused on any one thing right now, of Tran landing on top of Kumiko and not seeming to do anything immediately from there. But you do now, as a result, have sort of a continuous feed of information from the environs of the currently inert riot suppression tank. Once in the basements, once in the basements, if I assume that everyone follows the directions given to where Burn is, then it'll take you a little bit of schlepping to get there. So if there's anything in particular in that, you know, is a development with you during this time, then this is that time.
I think at first I take refuge in the spreading of my consciousness outside of my body, and into the data feed of Tran, of the others, not sinking into any of those in great detail, but just dispersing consciousness. Mm-hmm. When I am in my body, I guess gradually reorienting to the situation, but still mostly out of it, I'm just saying, what happened? Cal, what did I do? And I'm looking at my hands, looking for any signs of blood or viscera.
What there is on your hands are streaks of the urban camo paint that Kumiko has on its fuselage.
As we settle into our location, it's now stationary.
You'll be stationary once you arrive where Burn is.
Fair. Yeah. I just kind of fingertips across the wall as we pass by, trying to grind off material that really isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I likely catch that you're doing that and try to help you wipe off your hands, even as we're continuing to move. I'm fishing through my first aid kit for some rubbing alcohol, whatever I can get that I think might help. And I don't answer your question directly, just repeat You're okay, kid. You're going to be fine.
All right. Burn. You had a little bit of time while that was going on topside that we, I think, understandably didn't really check in with. But was there any particular communication that you were trying to get done during that time? This seems like a decent interval to catch up on it if we need to.
I think what I would like, well, once I'm aware that there are issues with Kumiko, I'm trying to scrub any footage that there may have been.
Good news.
Cameras are still offline.
Oh, good. That was within the dark sphere.
Yes.
H is still on thin ice, but fine. I will relay no footage, so there's that at least. And then 15 seconds later, that message is deleted. Mm-hmm. And, like, I hope it comes as sort of read by this point, but when I say message is deleted, like, at sort of the server level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is my cool understanding.
Traceless, yeah. When I see that, I do breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief after my slip. But as I'm approaching the point where we're all meeting, I realize for the first time that I'm afraid to look at Ing's face again because I'm not sure what I'm going to see.
Mm-hmm. Ing, you are at least vaguely aware of inputs through Tran. Like you said, your sort of attention is diffuse for the most part here. And it's through Tran, particularly perched on Kumiko's chassis, that you become aware that a number of IMX branded drones and bots have arrived at the intersection in front of PSSHQ. There are a handful of those little screen boys like was outside the frontispiece and got wrecked by Tama. And two of what you initially sort of have a stronger reaction to as thinking they're leapers, but a second glance will show that they are bulkier, if not larger, of frame, and without the various tendrils that the leapers use. They're in IMX colors and branding. They are much more like the real-world Boston Dynamics little dog bots that the leapers kind of take their cues from. Also, IMX branded here. The PSS officers seem to be having gotten up and out of the tear gas cloud, just kind of milling about. And a couple moments after the IMX equipment enters the area, Tran, without any particular instruction, which is not totally unusual given how your drones are configured, takes off and sort of hovers at a fairly high altitude, keeping some kind of watch over the area, but with less detail available to Tran's sensor array. Your other drones are more spread out in the general vicinity and not as proximate to goings-on. At about this time, not exactly simultaneously, but quickly enough that we don't have to break it up, everybody converges on Burn's location.
I immediately pull Ing into a hug.
Again, kind of stiffening it first, and then collapsing into it.
That probably takes both of us slightly down to the ground, but yeah, hug does not cease.
Yeah. Cal is sturdy, Ing is very large.
I give them a moment, and then I add a large fiddler crab hand on Ing's shoulder to the hug, and wait for a sign that more hugging is or isn't warranted, but just stand there and offer support.
A hand goes to the claw.
Sort of standing back awkwardly.
While you are standing back awkwardly, Burn, you get a message from K&B that says, okay, looked into it a little bit, and it's entirely possible that a few weeks ago I may have sold an anonymous buyer some of the tools that were used to take down the cameras today. Kind of sorry, but also just kind of what I do for business? ?
Thanks for looking into it. No, like, harm, since it wasn't actually you doing it. Shit's happening.
Yeah, ellipsis. And then a beat followed by, this gray hat hacker stuff is dramatic sometimes. Sighing emoji.
Pro tip, though. In the future, scrub personality from tools you sell.
Reply comes, yeah, weirdly enough, not my touch.
Motherfuckers.
Pointing up emoji. In the meantime, the hug has borne Cal and Ing both to the ground, with Kato's fiddler crab arm still on Ing's shoulder.
I sort of bend over forward, work suite wise, such that the arm stays on the shoulder. I'm at probably a very strange angle.
And
no, you're just golfing.
Ing's hand does reach over to the hand on the shoulder to clasp it as well. And after a few seconds, reaches out in the general direction of Burn without looking.
Reaching out in the general direction of Burn without looking, you actually find yourself clasping a hand unexpectedly, because Burn is further away than that. And suddenly, everyone here becomes aware, where they weren't a moment ago, of Apatia standing there, holding Ing's hand and sort of smiling a chrome smile at Ing. And she says, well, that was very tense, but very exciting. And that's where we'll end our session. Everybody can have 2 XP this time. Story and goals and such. And that will conclude this session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll all join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, you probably know where to find us, where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com, and on Tumblr and Blue Sky as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell, so say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. Remember crime names, remember your friends' faces, and hope that even momentarily, you don't have to choose.
Thank you for listening, everyone. If you choose to take revenge, don't become so focused in on it that you miss out on what's truly important.
Thanks for listening, folks. And regardless of what crimes you may commit, have an escape route handy.
Yes, thank you very much for listening, folks. And as a wise man once said, if you plan to commit crimes, make sure that you've got an escape route handy.
What the fuck, Beck?
I mean, you're going last forever now. It's too good all the time.
Mm-hmm. If I can make the punks laugh, I've done my job. And hopefully some of the folks at home as well.
It's pretty much batting 1,000. And as the poet once said, the machines that kept you alive were careless. Did you ask them to forgive you before you passed on? Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for an invocation. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their other work at the link in the show notes. Editing on our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet, where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics were dicebunks.com or by the one and only Officer Armitage, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Machevic, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva McJonda, and you can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
All right, listen up, collective. Things are heating up over the protest, and gosh, it just kills me that I can't join, but at least I'm going to go and hang out with Cato. Look, I know that I'm not your parent, Tran, in a physical sense, but I'm just the person that happened to be there when you were born. But if you were born, and I'm not just talking to myself. In any case, something on my mind. This is probably presumptuous, but it's not impossible that sharing a bit of my own journey might be of interest to you, or might even help you someday with decisions that you make about you and who you are. I hope that you'll make your own decisions when you're ready, but for what it's worth, here's one that I'm making. You might have noticed that most humans treat us differently than they do each other. When they see all of this metal, the first thing you see on their face is either revulsion, fear, or hate, the moment they realize that you're not just a mindless robot, that is. The more open-minded of the bunch might stop to ask themselves whether they're judged too quickly. Maybe you were born human, but you've just had a fully body prosthetic due to some accident. Your brain might still be organic, they think. You can see it on their face. It's not subtle when you've seen it so many times. That kindness can hurt more than the naked hate that pours from others. At least that's honest, and you know where you stand. So it's time for a little push. Some people replace their flesh with synthetic augments. I'm going to replace my augments with a little flesh. The people who view that as insulting and subversive are the very people I'd like to hold a mirror up for. How much flesh does it take to induce discomfort? How much discomfort does it take to instigate change? You, me, and the hand are about to find out, my little collective.